Today's topic is facts versus feelings, validation, invalidation, and critical thinking. And I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And this is a big topic. And I want to preface what we're going to talk about with saying this isn't going to be easy. I know a lot of times people say, just validate their feelings. It'll, you know, just do this, just do that. And they make it seem like a very easy thing to do. But this takes practice. And as human beings, we're going to make mistakes. Parents aren't perfect. And so we're going to get into some ideas about how to help validate your child's feelings if they come to you and say they're transgender. But I also just want to let you know that this is going to take practice and you're not going to get it right the first time or the second time. But this is how you start to build a relationship with your child and understand the feelings that they have that are sort of motivating that gender confusion.
Yeah. And it's important, it's imperative to start parsing out what the difference is between a feeling and a fact. Mm-hmm. You want to validate feelings. Feelings are never wrong. Feelings just are. Mm-hmm. Feelings work like red flags to let you know, hey, I'm uncomfortable. Something feels wrong here. I need to figure out why. Or, oh, this feels really great. I really like this. I want more of this. That's kind of the purpose of feelings. So feelings themselves are never wrong. There's something that you need to look at and ask yourself, okay, why am I feeling this? Is this an appropriate response to this feeling? Whereas facts are facts. Facts are things that we know are true, that we know are real. And facts are either right or wrong. And unfortunately, in our culture and our society today, we have gotten into a postmodernist sort of philosophical era where the postmodernists would say there's no such thing as ultimate truth. All truth is truth. Your truth is true and my truth is true and everybody has truth and there's no such thing as truth. One of the best apologists that I ever heard talking about postmodern theory, he said, if someone tells you there's no such thing as truth, they're asking you not to believe them. Well, that can't be a true statement if there's no such thing as truth. So there is truth, there are facts, and to figure out where you should validate a child and where you should correct a child's thinking, you really have to be able to parse those things out.
And I have a question about that. If a child comes to you and says, a girl, if your daughter comes to you and says, Mom, I'm a boy, and you say, well, let's go get you a genetic test to find out. Hmm. Is that going to be an effective way of addressing that, just to show her the fact that she is actually a girl?
You know, I don't think it will be. It should be, because sex is biological. Sex is factual. We have chromosomes which determine our sexual identity as male or female. But unfortunately, what the gender industry has done is start to substitute that word gender for sex. And gender is a word that is, it's a linguistic term. It applies to nouns in certain languages, but it's been co-opted into this gender ideology and being conflated for sex. So what gender ideologists will tell you is it doesn't matter what your body says. It matters what you think and feel inside. So even if that genetic test comes back and says XX chromosomes, there's no deviation, there's nothing unusual about it, the child will probably still say, because she has been taught to say, it doesn't matter what my body is saying. It matters what I feel inside. And that's why it's so important to be able to differentiate between feelings and facts. Does that make sense?
Definitely. So if you try to fix somebody's feelings with facts, it sounds like that's not going to work.
Yeah, I don't think so, because feelings are just not the same as facts, and feelings can absolutely fly in the face of facts, which is what's happening with gender ideology. My feelings are that I'm not exactly like a girl, or I'm not exactly like a boy. And it's based so much on stereotypes, these harmful, regressive stereotypes about what it means to be a girl or what it means to be a boy. And so your feelings just can fly in the face of that. But it is important to recognize people's feelings, to validate that, oh, I can see why you would feel that way. Oh, you're a boy who really likes music and who really likes dancing and who maybe loves the color pink. And other boys in the rest of society are telling you that's not cool. Boys like football. Boys, you know, like playing in the mud and playing with cars, and no boy wears pink. Those are all stereotypes. Those are all cultural stereotypes. But this boy is caught in those, and he's hearing from society, you're not okay the way you are. Boys are not like you. And that's hurtful, and that's confusing, and that's scary, because you're always comparing yourself, for better or for worse, to what's going on around you and what people around you are telling you. So it's really important to validate that child's feelings. I can see why you would feel that way. People are telling you it's wrong for a boy to wear pink. You know, people are telling you boys are not dancers. Now you can bring up some facts while you're validating those feelings. I actually have a male cousin who is a ballet dancer. He now runs his own studio. I could bring up to that boy, well, you know, my cousin, he's a dancer, but he's a man and he's very comfortable being a man. So being a dancer doesn't mean you can't be a man. But it's still important to say, I understand why you feel that way. I see what you're saying. Those feelings are real.
And I think that that's the key to this, is that so often there are just profound underlying feelings when a child comes and says they're transgender. Mm-hmm. And parents really need to figure out a way to kind of delve down into those feelings so that they can understand what's motivating this identity. And we're going to just segue now to some role modeling that Maria and I did to sort of show you the difference between dismissing a child's feelings versus validating a child's feelings. Mom, I just don't look like the other girls. I look like a boy.
Oh, that's ridiculous. You do not look like a boy. You're beautiful.
You just don't get it.
Yes, I do. I felt the same way when I was your age.
Things just aren't the same now, Mom. Social media and everything, it's just different.
We had teen magazines and TV shows. It's no harder today than it was when I was a kid.
You just don't get it. Mom, I don't look like the other girls. I'm a boy.
What? You're telling me you don't like the way you look? You don't feel like you look right? Tell me more about that.
I have big bones and an ugly face, and I don't look like the other girls. They're pretty and soft and gentle, and I'm just this big clunky thing.
Oh, it sounds like when you compare yourself to the other girls, you feel like you come up short. Is that right?
Yeah, my friends like Hannah and Josie, they're so pretty. They are lovely, and they're popular and everybody likes them, and people tease me.
Oh, that sounds like it must be really hurtful if people tease you.
It is, Mom. I'm just different from all the other girls, Mom.
Well, you are different than some of the other girls. That's true. But isn't it okay that not all girls are the same? I mean, what about Sarah? She's into karate and she's into cars, right?
Yeah.
But just because she's into things that are a little different than other girls are into, that doesn't mean she's not a girl, does it?
No, she's definitely a girl.
Yeah. This is a hard thing to be dealing with. Is there anything that I can do to help?
I don't know. I think talking really helped. Thanks, Mom.
I'm really glad. Anytime you need to talk, I'm happy to talk with you. We did two scenes. The first one was where the mom invalidated the daughter. What invalidation is, and you saw it in the video, is telling a child or telling a person your feelings are wrong. That's really the heart of invalidation. If somebody says, oh, you're too sensitive. You need to stop being so sensitive. No, that's not really, people weren't mean to you. You're just being, you know, oversensitive. Those are invalidation. It's telling someone their feelings are wrong. And what that does, especially with kids, if a child grows up with a lot of invalidation, they learn not to trust their feelings. They learn that they cannot trust that what they're feeling reflects reality. And that kind of sets them up for some dangerous situations. If they're in an abusive relationship with a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and, you know, the child comes to, let's say it's a girl, she comes to her mom and says, wow, John was really mean to me today. He, you know, he told me my outfit was ugly. And the mom just invalidates that and says, well, your outfit is kind of ugly. I mean, he was just telling you the truth. That completely rejects, negates, doesn't deal with the fact that John was rude. And when someone is rude, it hurts. And that feeling needs to be recognized. Because honestly, when your child comes to you with hurt, your first instinct as a parent is to get rid of the hurt, you know, take that away. But invalidating the feelings isn't going to take away the hurt. But that's what the mom tried to do. She said, that's ridiculous. The daughter said, you know, I don't look like I should. I look like a boy. The mom said, that's ridiculous. You don't look like a boy. So that's ridiculous tells the child what you're feeling is stupid. That's an invalidating statement. You don't look like a boy. That's tough because the mom really may think, you know what, you don't look like a boy. You're being ridiculous. It might be better for the mom to say, gosh, I don't think you look like a boy. Tell me why you think you look like a boy. Kind of turn it back to the child. I don't understand this, but tell me more about it. When the daughter said, you just don't get it, mom said, yes, I do. Yes, I do. It ignores, it invalidates the daughter's feeling of not being heard. The daughter already doesn't trust that the mom knows what's going on. A better thing to say might be, gosh, I'm trying to understand. I really want to understand. That would validate the child's feelings. And then the last thing the mom said was, it's no harder today than when I was young. I'm not sure that's true.
But it doesn't really matter, does it?
Mm-mm. No, it's not about the mom. It's about the child. And putting away, as parents, kind of putting away our own perspective on things and really listening to the child is so important.
Maria, that's so interesting what you said, because a lot of times parents feel uncomfortable with validating a child's feelings because they're afraid that when they validate a child's feelings, they're telling that child that their feelings are accurate and that ultimately they're validating this gender identity that the child has taken on. So they're afraid to do that. Instead, they want to, you know, show the child why their child is wrong, why that identity is harmful or unhelpful or somehow the result of underlying feelings. Can you kind of address that validating somebody's feelings doesn't mean that you're telling them that their feelings are accurate?
Yeah, I have a story that captures this really well. A mom was talking with her daughter. The daughter had indicated that she thought she was non-binary transgender. And the mom and the daughter were talking about why the daughter felt that way. And at one point, the daughter said, you don't believe me. You don't believe anything that I'm feeling. And I loved what the mom said. She said, you know, I think this is a lot like if someone in Wisconsin said, oh, I feel so terrible, I've got a headache and a fever and I'm tired and my body aches, and all of that person's friends said, dude, that's malaria. You've totally got malaria. And the daughter laughed and the mom said, yeah, that's kind of funny, right? Because the person in Wisconsin, what did they have probably? And the daughter said, they've got the flu. Yeah, a person in Wisconsin with those symptoms probably has the flu. And the mom said, I think this is the same way with you. I totally believe that you're feeling everything you're feeling. Mm-hmm. People around you are telling you that means you're transgender. I think what it really means is you have adolescence with a touch of autism.
Wow.
So that really separates the feelings from the facts, because you can misinterpret the facts through the lens of your feelings. Your feelings are not wrong. Your interpretation of the facts is wrong. A lot of us grew up with invalidation and now we're trying to learn how to validate, it can feel very scripted. Mm-hmm. Even when I go into a conversation with my kids, if I'm really thinking like, all right, I need to validate, it can feel fake. It can feel like, oh, I can see why you are feeling that way. Tell me more. But those words are so affirming and so life-giving and so recognizing of the child that even if it feels kind of fake and scripted to you, I think it still has a lot of power.
Yes, definitely. And we're going to watch a video now that talks a little bit more about how this process works. And one of the things that I really think is important that Naomi talks about in this video is the importance of clearing your own feelings. Mm-hmm. Because one of the problems that parents get into when they're trying to validate their children's feelings is they haven't cleared out their own feelings. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to do that. And I would suggest practicing it a lot in safer, simpler situations, because if your feelings are out on the surface, then it's hard to get through your feelings to get to your child's feelings.
I learned about validation through listening. Empathy, you feel what that person feels, even though you're not going through what they're going through. You feel with them, not just for them. And then with empathy, the validation techniques almost always work. So how do you get empathy? Well, now I have to take my feelings and put them away and then center myself, which is a way of breathing. So you take all your own feelings, we'll get rid of them, and you're then like an empty vessel. You can take in the feelings. Then I learned to rephrase. Rephrasing is exquisite listening. How does that person talk? Is it fast? Is it slow? What is the pitch? What is the tempo? And then you say what that person has said in a question, as if you're asking, is this what you mean?
Well, I just love these insights from Naomi. I feel like she's just really captured some of the importance of validating feelings, Maria.
Yeah, it's a great video. I would recommend everyone look it up. We'll have it in the resources at the end of this video. It's Naomi Fell. And the whole video is really a great explanation of validation. And I love one of the things that she said in it about don't lie. Don't lie to the person that you're talking to. Getting caught in a lie really can damage your relationship with somebody. And lies are not ultimately helpful. They don't heal things. They don't improve things. And so when you are sharing with your daughter or your son, or you're, you know, listening to them, don't say things that you know aren't true. Oh, I know exactly how you feel. No, you probably don't.
What if your child came up and said, you don't believe me, do you? Which is what a lot of these kids are coached to do, to really get in their parents' face, to insist that the parents accept them. Or to push back on it. And so that's a pretty difficult situation for a parent to be in, because they've got a very aggressive, very determined child who's getting right in their face and saying, you don't believe me, do you?
Mm-hmm. Again, I think if you in that situation can focus on the difference between the feelings and the facts, mm-hmm. that will help, because you can say, like that mom who used the analogy about the sick person in Wisconsin, you can say, I absolutely believe that you are feeling everything you're feeling. I absolutely believe that you're struggling with this. I absolutely believe this is really hard and I know you're suffering. I do not believe some of the things that transgender ideology is saying are true. I don't believe that there is research support to back this up. If you find some of that, you bring it to me. And if I'm wrong, I'll change my opinion. But what I have seen so far and my research tells me, I don't believe that what you're being taught is true, but I absolutely believe that what you're feeling is true.
So this can really be an opportunity, it sounds like, to teach critical thinking skills, which I think is something that doesn't happen in the schools as much as it used to. Schools actually are really focused on feelings and often suggest that feelings are truth, which is a little bit dangerous to get into, because we can go down all kinds of scary rabbit holes if we teach kids that their feelings are fact, which is why it's important to be able to parse out the two.
Well, I think, unfortunately, schools are now in the business of teaching kids what to think rather than how to think. And so critical thinking is something that we've really lost the ability to do in the culture, but it's so valuable. And it really starts with asking yourself, what does this sentence mean? What does this word mean? When your child says to you, I'm living my authentic life. Okay, what do you mean by authentic? What does authentic mean to you? Well, it means I'm being who I am. Okay, who are you? I am a male trapped in a female body or something. Oh, well, how do you know that what you feel is true? Because sometimes I feel really angry when I'm driving, and I have a momentary thought that I would very much like to crash my car into the side of the car in front of me. I really want to do that. That's a feeling. Should I pursue that feeling?
Would that make you authentic?
Right. That's a good question. Yeah. If I'm going to authentically pursue all my feelings.
So Maria, when should you validate a child's feelings versus help them to develop critical thinking skills?
That's really a good question. And so much of navigating a relationship is sort of having that nuanced sense of what does this relationship need right now? What does this person need right now? I think a good rule of thumb is when your child is talking about their feelings, validate their feelings. When the child starts talking about statements of fact, then address those statements of fact and start applying some critical thinking skills to those. One of the gender industry's favorite phrases is let the child lead. Mm-hmm. And what they mean by that is just do everything the child wants. You know, don't ever tell the child no. That's not what I mean by it. But in a conversation, when you are trying to listen to someone who's having a struggle, when you're trying to understand what's going on, let that person lead. Naomi Fell talks in the video about empathizing and about reflecting, and those are really powerful things. In the validation role play that you and I did, I did at one point rephrase what you said. And I said, oh, it sounds like you're saying that you don't think you look like other girls. That feels really mechanical and that feels really fake to just repeat what somebody else said, but it's surprising how often you get that wrong. Mm-hmm. How often you hear something just a little bit different than the speaker said it. And so by reflecting it back, you give the speaker the opportunity to either say, yes, you heard me, thank you for listening, or, oh no, that's not what I meant by that. Mm-hmm. So following that person's train of thought and listening actively the whole time and saying, is this a feeling that they're communicating to me? Or is this a fact that I need to address with some critical thinking skills? Is this a true fact or not?
And that's so important. And one of the things that I sort of want to warn parents about is that kids are not learning these skills at school. And we touched on it a little bit, but not only are they not learning critical thinking skills, they're actually being taught things that are not true. There are actually experts who go into the schools and tell children that they get to choose what gender they are. And they're conflating sex and gender. They're suggesting that if you feel like you're a boy and you're a girl, well, then you actually are a boy, that your feelings dictate facts. And this is a very confusing place to be as a child. So if you're coming from school where you feel like you're supposed to be getting facts, but what you're getting is feelings, and you're undermining your critical thinking skills, undermining your instincts, undermining your reality, that is so confusing. So it sort of compounds the child's confusion because they already have these feelings of not fitting in, of having this gender confusion, and that's compounded by the fact that they're getting a lot of misinformation and really damaging information from schools now. And most parents don't have any clue this is going on.
It's so insidious for a child to be taught something that's not true and to be taught it by trusted adults. It's really just been in the last 5 years that the gender industry has really actively gotten into the public schools via the NEA, via the school boards, via a lot of activist teachers who are coming out of college. And they're actively sowing lies into students' day, throughout the day. The school counselor is coming into English class. This happened in a middle school in my district. The counselor came into an English class and gave a presentation on gender harassment in a core class. This wasn't even in the family life program. This is in a core class in English. And there was a boy in there who knew that his parents were not on board with this and they would not want him listening to this. This seventh grade boy raised his hand and asked to be excused to go to the bathroom, and the counselor would not let him leave until after he'd watched the video. So that was incredibly smart and mature of this boy to recognize, and he went home and told his parents about it. But this is what's happening. Kids are not even allowed to excuse themselves from this. So it's so important that parents know this is happening. The schools are not benign. They are not neutral. Public schools are actively teaching this with the support and the encouragement and the money and the resources of the gender industry. We had a couple questions. The first one is, my son constantly tells me I don't and can't understand. How do I deal with him shutting down the conversation before it even starts?
That is such a good question, because sometimes kids just put up a wall. And if you don't completely and 100% agree with them, they don't even want to engage with you. So what do you do in that situation?
I was going to ask you. What do you do?
You know, Usually when a child is that dug in, it's not a good time to try and address this. And so generally I try to do something else, do an activity, do something to build our relationship rather than try and address it then. And maybe even say, you're right, I don't understand this. I'm not sure that I need some time to think about this. I love you. And I want to be there for you, but I need some time to process. And I think that's okay to do.
Oh, that's great. I love that. It's so easy as a parent to escalate things. Your child says you don't understand. You insist that you do. The child gets mad. You get madder. I love that you said, you know, this is just not a good time to address that. And I love what you said about just saying, hey, you're right. I don't understand. And I think that's so engaging with a child, to think that they have something that their parent doesn't understand. Mm-hmm. And they may be completely wrong, you know, that the parent doesn't understand, but to have that feeling of like, I can teach my parents something. And you can say also, let's talk about this later. You think about what you want to tell me. I'm going to think about what I want to know. And maybe we can sit down later because I really want to understand.
Yeah. And even some, you know, depending on how upset the kid is, if the child is really just angry and clearly just doesn't want to talk with you, I don't think it's worth trying to push the conversation. But if they're just sort of pushing back a little bit, you can always just say, I don't understand. Can you tell me about it? Because that allows them an opportunity to talk. And usually especially when kids are allowed an opportunity to talk, it's hard for them to talk and be so angry at the same time.
Yeah. Well, and another good strategy, if you have other adults in your sphere that you trust, you can always offer to the child, would you like to talk with Aunt Susie about this? Because sometimes, frankly, your relationship with your child has gotten so tangled, has, you know, maybe is not as good as it should be. Maybe there's been trust broken and the child is just not in a position to receive from you. That's a really good time. If you have trusted adults, aunts, uncles, grandparents, you know, good friends, to say, hey, would you like to talk to this other person? Maybe they can help with this.
Yeah. And it is, I think that each situation is different and parents just really have to to know that there are a couple different options. There's the, you know, try to validate the child. There's the, can we talk about this later? There's the giving them some resources. So there are many options. The one option you don't want to do is that escalating. Of course I understand you.
Because that never goes anywhere good.
Yeah, it invalidates the child and it also escalates the intensity of it. And studies have shown that when people are angry, they actually can't think clearly. And that it, boys and girls take a different amount of time to actually calm down. Boys take a lot longer. So if you have a son who's really angry, they're going to need maybe up to an hour to just kind of calm down before they're able to engage. And I think often as parents, we want to just fix it right now. And that's not always the best solution, because if you have a child who's just completely emotionally, just angry, that child is not a child who's going to be able to even hear what you're saying.
One other little thing that I want to offer parents that I found really useful is asking a child in a calm moment, not in that escalating moment, but asking, what do you want? What do you want to have happen here? Mm-hmm. And I think often we're not asked that. Even as adults, people don't ask us what we want. Other people tell us what they want, and we've got to, you know, decide what to do with that. But being asked, what do you want to see happen here? I've never had an experience where a child did not take that seriously and really think about it. But often what comes out, the child realizes is ridiculous as it's coming out. One time when I was very, very angry and I had learned, ask yourself what you want when you're angry. The cat had thrown up when we were trying to get out the door on a trip, and I was just yelling at the cat and on all this, and I'm cleaning it up, and I'm like, what do I want? Like, I want the cat not to have barfed.
Yes.
I said that, I'm like, okay, I don't have a time machine. I can't go back. That's ridiculous. But hearing it come out of your own mouth, you can go, oh yeah, that's really ridiculous.
Yeah, and sometimes the kids don't even know what they want. They just have these feelings bubbling up and they don't know. And so asking them can actually help them kind of think, well what do I want? They may not even know.
Yeah.
So give them an opportunity to kind of reflect on that.
Yeah. Okay, we've got one more question. This is about invalidation. The mom asks, I grew up with a lot of invalidation. How do I stop the cycle from repeating in my family?
And it is hard because we learn patterns from our families of origin. And so sometimes we have to really work hard to break out of negative patterns. And I think practice, use even really simple opportunities that aren't high stress, that aren't really emotionally charged. Use those opportunities to practice these skills, and then they become more second nature and you're able to draw on them when it is a more emotionally charged situation.
That's such great advice. Even if your child gets up in the morning and says, oh, I'm still tired, I'm really tired, you can practice that validation and go, oh, it sounds like you didn't sleep well. Is that what you're telling me? What happened? And that's such a great idea to practice those. Listening to what you say. I think very often we don't hear ourselves. And so just trying to actively listen to what you're saying and asking yourself, did I just invalidate my child or my spouse or my friend? And practicing, just practice, practice, practice.
And I have to say, the person who asked this, I have a lot of hope for, because they've recognized that they had these negative patterns, because a lot of people don't. They don't realize that they're carrying forward negative patterns that they learned as a child. So just recognizing it is a big step. And I think that is another just word of wisdom I would give to parents is, as you said, listen to yourself when you're engaging with your child and determine, like, is this moving us forward, or is this maybe I'm repeating a pattern that I learned when I was a child?
And another thing, you can ask the people around you. Mm-hmm. This will be very disarming for a child if you say to your child, do I invalidate you? Do I make you feel like I'm not listening to you? And you might not always get exactly the answer you were hoping for, but you might get some truth there. I don't want to belabor the point, but before my husband and I had kids, when we would take road trips, we would often, whoever was not driving would read a book to the other person. Mm-hmm. And I was in the passenger seat reading this book. I don't remember what it was, but it was some sort of a psychology self-help. And I got to this section on passive aggressiveness. I never thought I was passive aggressive. It never would have occurred to me. And then I'm reading like, oh, you know, passive aggressive people will just be dismissive and say, never mind, it doesn't matter. No, no, I'm fine. I'm reading through these. I was like, oh, cool. Oh, that's me. So it is really hard to see those things in yourself, but ask the people around you because they'll tell you the truth.
Yeah. And sometimes the truth is hard to hear, but in this situation, it's so important for us to rebuild our relationships with our kids. If they've been fractured because a child's come home with a transgender identity. And if you're just at the start of one, building those relationships and making them stronger is going to do so much good in helping work with your child through this. So they don't go down that really harmful path of medically transitioning and being medicalized for life. So the stakes here are really high and it's worth the effort.
If any parents who are listening, if you have any questions, if you have any thoughts for future episodes that you'd like to hear us talk about a little bit and investigate, please feel free to send that in. Go to www.partnersforethicalcare.com. You can submit your story there. You can submit questions there. And we just really want to engage this topic.
And I will post some links to sources, to some things to help support parents who are going through this. So if you watch this and you're like, well, I need more, just check out the description below and we'll post some links for you.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.